Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, Colorado voters will be deciding on whether to allow wolves to be reintroduced in the state. The Secretary of State's office has confirmed that enough signatures have been turned in for the measure to appear on November's ballot. We'll hear from one of the proponents. Then, local news is in crisis around the country. As we heard on yesterday's show, Denver is considered a microcosm of what's happening nationally, with major newspapers closing and massive layoffs in other local newsrooms. Well, this evening there will be a discussion at the Denver Public Library on what's happening here in Colorado. We'll hear from one of the panellists. Then we'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line before we go back to the BBC for headlines. Then it's time for science, and today, How on Earth will feature two interviews, one with Alison Holleran of the Audubon Rockies, that's on an upcoming citizen science bird counting program, and the other with CSU professor Joel Berger on wildlife conservation efforts, including some successes. At 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. State lawmakers will be back for the 2020 state legislative session that begins this week. And there could be some relief in sight for college students. A bill will be introduced that would mandate that the state pay for the first 2 years of student loans for new graduates of the state's public colleges. Those graduates, though, must commit to stay in Colorado and enroll in a repayment program that's based on income. The Denver Post reports that students who qualify would have their monthly payment paid in full by the state for the first 2 years after graduation. Senate Majority Leader Stephen Fenberg, who's a Democrat from Boulder, plans on sponsoring the Get On Your Feet bill. A similar program was established a few years ago in New York. State Senator Angela Williams announced on Monday that she will not seek re-election in this year's election. The Democrat from Denver, who represents Senate District 33, made the announcement, saying State Representative James Coleman announced last November that he was running for that seat. At that time, Angela Williams was still a candidate in the Democratic primary race for the U.S. Senate seat. She withdrew from that race on November 27th. As part of its homelessness strategy update, Boulder City Council will this evening consider a proposal from one of its members to keep the city's severe weather shelter open every day during cold weather months, and not just on days when the temperature falls below a predetermined threshold. Right now, the severe weather shelter only opens when the temperature is forecast to drop below 32 degrees. It's been a year since Boulder Council members rejected a proposal to expand services that had been offered by the city's only severe weather shelter to better help those experiencing homelessness. But the proposal will get another hearing this evening. It's being put forward a second time by Councilman Aaron Brockett. The severe weather shelter debate will be part of a larger homelessness strategy update to Boulder City Council. Ahead of the meeting, Boulder Rights Watch started a petition that encourages people to sign if they agree that council should provide funds to operate the severe weather shelter every night in the late fall, winter and spring. And we'll have a report on tonight's City Council meeting on tomorrow's Morning Magazine. Well, following a recent court ruling on Denver's camping ban, police officers in the city are no longer enforcing the ordinance. As a result, tents have been popping up in Civic Park. The Denver Post reports that several people camping along 14th Street have said that the city's decision to stop enforcing the camping ban has emboldened them to pitch tents at high-profile locations. On December 27th, Denver County Judge Johnny Barajas dismissed a homeless man's ticket for violating the camping ban. And in his decision, the judge said that the ban amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. The city's attorney is appealing that ruling. And in the weather for the Front Range, expect breezy conditions again. Sunny skies with highs in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, we'll get close to 60 degrees under mostly sunny skies, but a slight cool off on Thursday. Those highs forecast to dip into the mid-40s. And right now, there is a slight chance of snow showers Thursday night into Friday. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. This November's ballot is looking to be a crowded one. Colorado voters will be deciding on one measure that could see grey wolves being reintroduced in the state. Yesterday, the Secretary of State's office confirmed that proponents of the statewide ballot measure, which would be a statutory and not a constitutional amendment, did in fact submit enough signatures to qualify for the 2020 ballot. Well, last year I spoke with Rob Edward, who's with the Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Fund. That's the group behind the ballot measure.
We haven't had wolves in Colorado since the mid-1940s, when they were wiped out after a long extended government campaign on behalf of livestock interests. We had wolves in Colorado up until 1945, and that was a full 20-some-odd years, almost 20 years, longer than Yellowstone had them. When the Yellowstone last wolves were wiped out in the 1920s, and then restoration through reintroduction happened with Mike and some good scientists in the mid-1990s. And so now we have wolves in the Northern Rockies populating the Northwest coast all the way down into Northern California. But wolves from Yellowstone are not repopulating Colorado, and that's why we're pushing for a reintroduction here. So that those individual wolves that do wander down through the wild, open country of southern Wyoming have somebody to meet up with.
Has there been an effort in the past for wolf reintroduction here in the state?
Has there been
any efforts in the past to reintroduce wolves?
Well, there has been a long-term effort by nonprofit organizations working together to convince the federal government that Colorado is the last best place for wolves, and that it was worthy of a similar federal effort like they did in Yellowstone and central Idaho through typical government grind. We've not made that happen. So this is the last best chance for Colorado to have wolves again. And it's a very important ecological restoration program.
Are there sites that have already been selected in the state that would serve as reintroduction areas?
Well, there are some very obvious places that we've identified over the course of the last 20 years. Papers that Mike has worked on with other scientists, taking GIS mapping data of the elk and deer populations, the biomass there, the land use patterns, and basically identifying that there's four really core areas stretching from north to south, one above north of I-70, another one just a little south of I-70, and then stretching down to the San Juans. Those are great places. It's up to the Division of Wildlife what their plan ultimately says the reintroduction sites will be, but we're fairly confident that unless something drastically changes with the distribution of elk in the state, the wolves are going to end up being concentrated in those core areas that have already been identified by science.
And of course, wolves, like any wild animal, don't recognize the human-created boundaries of states. So would we then potentially look at a wolf population going down into New Mexico, up into Wyoming, east and west? I mean, obviously, they're not going to just stay within the boundaries of Colorado.
Basically, we're the last big gap in wolf recovery from the high Arctic all the way to Mexico. We hope that what you just described does ultimately happen. it has some implications in the southern direction for Mexican wolves, and that's a complicated, long, complicated story. But certainly we want to see the wolf population here exchange genes with the wolves to the north as well.
That's Rob Edward. He's with the Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Fund, the group behind the ballot measure that was yesterday approved by the Secretary of State's office to appear on the 2020 ballot. And it's tentatively being known as Initiative 107. And it is the third measure that has now been approved for the 2020 ballot for voters around the state. And we'll be doing a lot more coverage on that as we get closer to November. It is 14 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Well, as we reported yesterday, PEN America has done a report taking a look at the state of local news around the country. And it's not always good news. In fact, local news is in a state of crises. There has been a steady succession of local outlets closing down and reporters being laid off. In fact, Denver was part of this PEN America report on the state of local news in the United States because it's seen as a microcosm of what's happening nationally. Well, this evening, inspired by that PEN America report, there will be a panel discussion happening at the Denver Public Library in partnership with the Colorado Media Project. One of those people participating will be Melissa Davis of the Gates Family Foundation, who says there is in fact a lot of good news now happening when it comes to local news here in the state.
Certainly a lot of great things have been happening kind of in the crucible of crisis. There's a lot of news outlets really trying to step up and fill gaps. I mean, we've lost just about half of the journalists over the past 10, 12 years. So that's a big decrease in just the number of people out there reporting on the beat. So as a result, journalists have had to get creative. Some that have left traditional news organizations have started up kind of scrappier, digital upstarts. So we're seeing a lot of really interesting things like, Denverite, which was recently, brought into CPR. And other things that have been happening, too, are public media, which has always had kind of a mandate to serve the public and to really provide unbiased educational news, which is really beloved by so many people and has a very strong and broad membership base. Public media is really playing a bigger and different role. I think it is nationwide, but particularly here in Colorado, you see, Rocky Mountain PBS, has really strong partnerships all over the state with universities and communities and the biggest membership organization in the state, in fact. They're building a new building in downtown Denver. And on the third floor of that building, there's going to be a shared newsroom. They're calling it CoLab. And they'll have a lot of traditional news organizations like the Colorado Press Association, the Associated Press, alongside, all sorts of other different organizations like the Colorado Sun, which is a exciting digital first upstart that launched last year and has made a big impact. There's other support in organizations like the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition. I know KGNU is planning to be a partner there. So the idea is that we're stronger together. Journalists are realizing their mission is foremost to serve the public. They always have, but now as the business model is changing, I think that's become even more crystal clear. And of course, you have outlets like CPR, individual outlets like KGNU that are forming coalitions. And I think that idea of just, journalists being stronger together and forming different kinds of partnerships, coalitions, and networks to get the news that Colorado needs out to the people is exciting.
Well, one of the solutions and opportunities for local news going forward that was identified in the Penn report is something that we're really seeing playing out here in Colorado. And that's really taking a deep dive into local issues and taking a look at what's happening in communities, because, of course, that's so relevant. And so I know KGNU has been really a big part of that in our collaboration with the Community Foundation of Boulder County and looking into issues here. But do you see that we need to take a new focus if we are really taking a look at local news, that we really need to start looking at local communities that maybe traditionally haven't had their voices heard as well?
Oh, definitely. I think that's the great opportunity, really, is that in a state of such upheaval and change, it really gives an opportunity for people that haven't had their voices heard as strongly in the traditional kind of power structures and dynamics. It gives them an opportunity to, really speak up and state what works for them. You mentioned, the partnership that you have with the Community Foundation, and I think that is a real exciting model that other community foundations might take a look at. There's obviously community need and stories that need to be covered, and as local folks see those needs and partner with strong outlets like KGNU, I think that's a great model.
Well, all of this will be discussed this evening, Melissa, at this event at the Denver Public Library. You're going to be speaking, as well as some of the folks involved in local media. But also, the State Librarian for Colorado is going to be there. Tell us about the role that you see maybe libraries could play as part of this, because this isn't something that we've traditionally seen in media.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting and, phenomenon that's kind of happening in some communities across the country. Longmont is one that is kind of right now in the process of considering the changing role of the library, which has always been such a fulcrum of community knowledge sharing and information dissemination. And libraries have a great position in every community. They're trusted. They're really respected, and they are known for, providing unbiased information. I think when they partner with, news outlets that are dedicated to the same ideals, that can be a great partnership in the sense that, libraries are in every community. Their infrastructure, and they're dedicated to the same ideals as journalists. I think there's a limit to what libraries can do. We don't want to put too much on their shoulders. They're already doing so much for our communities, from social services to, child care and education. And I think that they're great partners, though, and they help residents and journalists alike find resources, access open records, do a lot of the things that individuals and community members need to participate in a democracy, to be educated about the issues facing them and to be informed citizens.
As we finish up, Melissa, really, what do individual news consumers need to pay attention to, particularly as we are just, a few days ahead of the state legislative session kicking off for 2020? 2020 is going to be a major election year, and not just with the federal and the presidential elections, but there are going to be a lot of things at stake here in statewide ballot measures, and local communities will also have a lot of things on the November ballot. So this is a time that people need to really be informed and to pay attention to the news. So what is the role that you see for individuals and members of the community going forward as we are seeing some of these new local news projects emerge?
You mentioned the election and I think there's a big concern about the spread of misinformation online. I think it's important for folks to look at the sources of the information that you're reading and that you're sharing online. People that, make sure it's news outlets that you know and trust, ones that exist in your community. There have been some hoaxes even tried to being perpetrated here in Colorado last election season. And so journalists and newsrooms are certainly on the lookout for that type of misinformation again, and citizens and residents and community members can also play a role in not spreading misinformation. In addition, I think, the other thing that people should probably be aware of is that eventually, I think people are realizing that quality journalism costs money, and whether that's your public radio station that you're helping to support the great journalism that goes on there, or if it's your local newspaper that you're subscribing to or sending an extra donation at the holiday time, these are people in your community, and they're doing a great service. And if we want this service to continue to be around in our communities, we're probably as individuals going to have to contribute in some way.
Well, Melissa Davis is the Vice President of Strategic Communications and Informed Communities at the Gates Family Foundation. She's one of the panelists who will be speaking on what's happening with local news right here in Colorado. Really a panel that's inspired by the recent PEN America report into local news. And it's happening this evening at 6 p.m. at the Denver Public Library. And that's the main branch on west of 14th Avenue Parkway. Thank you so much for being with us, Melissa.
Thank you for covering us.
And you can find out more about KGNU's collaboration with the Community Foundation of Boulder County and our new Trends podcast and radio series. Just go to kgnu.org and subscribe to the podcast. Every month you'll hear a new episode that takes a deep dive into issues facing people in Boulder County, particularly people who've often been in communities that have been marginalized. So some of our episodes have taken a look at issues facing residents in mobile home communities and also folks who are dealing with different physical disabilities and how they are dealing with living in Boulder County and what resources are available. Just search for KGNU or Trends wherever you get your podcasts. It is just coming up on 8:26. Still lots more to come. We'll have science on how on earth that's coming up in just about 7 minutes time. Then, of course, at 9 o'clock, as always on Tuesdays, it's Alan Watts. Next, though, it's time for the comment line.
I occasionally listen to Hemispheres, and I would be very grateful, while it is a huge subject, if Ibrahim Kashrouni or some of the other commentators could comment on the current situation in Kashmir. Like many others, I think, I'm very concerned about the care of the and the welfare of the Muslim population in Kashmir, and I pray for their well-being. So if that could be addressed, that would be very positive, I believe.
I just wanted to say when Trump got elected, then one of the first things he did was kick out all the Muslims and claim they were all terrorists. He had it out for Iran right then. And the second thing, he claims that he is responsible for a lot of deaths of American soldiers. But the problem is it's never been reported publicly. Anytime an American soldier dies, we hear about it. So where are all these ones who died, according to what they're saying, that he's responsible for? And I'm hearing a thing on the air with the general there, and he sounds to me like he doesn't really know what he's talking about for having been involved for that long. All it sounds like they've been trying to do is dismiss the authorities in Iran the whole entire time, you know, and undermine Iran and make it look like Iran was doing it to Iraq.
Good morning. I have to weigh in on our president's current attack and assassination, essentially, of the second from the top in the political structure in Iran, a general, I can't remember his name. But, you know, this will be perfect for getting him out of a Senate trial. How can the United States try the president if we're in war with Iran in the next month or so? So, you know, it's certainly as good a strategy as any, and I don't think Israel will complain too much. I think Israel's our 51st state, if I remember right. Puerto Rico didn't get it, but Israel got it. So it's a joke, son. But anyway, you know, Congress has the sole authority to declare war, and our president is doing end runs around the Constitution right and left. He's shredding it as well as if he had a shredder in the office, you know, maybe going through it a page at a time. I don't know. Maybe that's his goal. But in any event, this is a crossroads for the United States, as everyone plainly knows. And republics do not live forever historically. You know, it's not in the cards. So we'll see what happens, and I'm crossing my fingers.
And that is the comment line. The number to call is 303-447-9911. You can leave a message anytime, and we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings. And tune in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. David Barsamian of Alternative Radio will join us live in the studio for a half-hour show, and we'll also take your calls on the current situation with Iran. That is tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.